Welcome to All Things New Orleans, WWNO's weekly local magazine. I'm Mallory Falk. We've got a great show this week. You'll hear from voters around New Orleans on their feelings about next month's election. You'll get a tour of Tulane's new Waterfront Research Center. And we'll say goodbye to a WWNO original. Stay tuned. First off this week, we have our latest installment of WWNO's community engagement project, The Listening Post. This week, The Listening Post team shares voices from around the city talking about the upcoming election and the fate of 70,000 ineligible Louisiana voters.
The Listening Post, here's Yanola.
Welcome to The Listening Post. I'm your host, Jesse Hardman. With November's election right around the corner, we've been asking folks around New Orleans a simple question. What do you want the next president to know about your life?
That I would honestly consider myself working poor at this point. We're past paycheck to paycheck. Like, my dog needs to go to the vet and I haven't had the money. I need contacts. I'm wearing glasses right now. I haven't had the money. And I'm here and able and willing to work. And a way that I think that I'd like the next president to consider that.
Listening poster Jessica Musinski met up with me on Maple Street in Uptown on a recent morning. She was on her way to one of her three jobs.
I am a server, a tour guide, and I drive Lyft and Uber.
When Musinski checks on the 2016 presidential election, it seems like Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are thinking about her situation.
Actually, the people I resonate best with are poor people and people that are really blue collar. That seems to be a base that I have. I have a tremendous base. Those are the people that like me.
We've got to keep making sure that there are good jobs, and we've got to protect good union jobs against the kind of assault that is coming from all sides.
That's Donald Trump speaking on Fox News and Hillary Clinton on the campaign trail. Jessica Musinski's grandfathers were Pennsylvania coal miners. She grew up in Trenton, New Jersey, and is the first person in her family to go to college. And she works hard, just like her ancestors. Musinski says last election, she feels like her vote directly affected her life. President Obama gave her a shot at something she'd been missing.
And I can say, honestly, if it was not for the national program, I wouldn't have had health care for like basically the last year, minimum, if not longer.
Musinski says as she tries to process the direction of the country and the upcoming election, she goes back to her New Jersey roots. Bruce Springsteen helps make sense of things.
Maybe something like my hometown, which deals with him as a child looking at his father. His father was a factory worker, and it's really just about him trying to, you know, have that American dream, work hard enough at a job that he knows is going to be there for him, have a house, support his family, raise his children.
Sit on his lap, that big old Buick steers we drove through town. Tassel my hair.
Jessica Musinski joined the Listening Post after text messaging our project number. You can text hello to 504-303-4348 if you'd like to join. Maybe you can even be our next featured voice on the show. You can also participate by stopping by one of our Listening Post recording devices. Lately, we've had them stationed at the Broadmoor Wellness and Arts Center and the Ashe Cultural Center on O.C. Haley. Folks have been stopping by to record their thoughts on our question of the week. What do you want the next president to know about your life?
I would like the next president to know how much better my life has been, how much my life has improved over the past 8 years, how much I have learned about being a calm person, about looking out for the best interests of all people.
Yes, I would like the next president, whoever it may be, to concentrate about things that matter to me and people like me. Cost of living in our beautiful city here in New Orleans, has doubled or tripled after, of course, after we all came back from Hurricane Katrina, and nobody has regulated this.
I am a foreigner, and I don't want someone who hates foreigners to be the president of the U.S.
If it's the girl president, I want her to know I like to sing and I like to do art.
I think we need to do a much better job of reminding people that all politics is local. And while the president is important, our mayor is even more important. I think my vote matters right now, particularly with the Orleans Parish School Board election coming up.
The next president should know that I am a working woman and that I am full of love and soul, and I'm working really hard.
So that last voice you heard was Claudia Lopez, the newest member of the Listening Post team. Claudia, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a New York native, originally born in Brooklyn, but have since then moved a little bit outside of the city, and I live on Long Island. I am about to graduate from Xavier University of Louisiana. My favorite thing about New Orleans is riding my bike here. I love that I can turn on any block, and I feel like I'm in a different city.
Well, so Claudia is going to read text messages that people sent us this week. And our main question was, what do you want the next president to know about your life? Take it away, Claudia.
So the first person said, I'm a single parent interested in furthering my career and education, and I'm interested in eventually owning my own business. The next one, this one's a little different, that I'm a 1099 and pay my taxes. I'm an ex-felon and vote. I'm a single dad and take care of my daughter. But also, I'm a son and love my parents.
Wow, there's a lot in that one.
I know, I love the one, the and last line, I'm a son and love my parents. So this person, very confident in Clinton's campaign, says, she should know that I live along the Gulf Coast and have nightmares about climate change. And they don't disappear when I wake up.
Wow, I'm trying to imagine what a dream about climate change involves.
This one, short and sweet, says, that I'm not rich, but I matter.
Wow, that's really powerful.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that one as a college student. So our last one, I want the same opportunity for myself and my family as the candidates have had. Everyone wants to live their own version of the American dream with the basics, like having a career, earning enough money to live, have a safe home, save money, and weather financial hardships, while having money to have experiences like travel, vacation, etc.
Claudia, welcome aboard and great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Jesse.
We also asked Listening Post participants about another election topic, the fact that more than 70,000 Louisiana residents who are on probation or parole with felony convictions, can't vote. People like Randy Tucker, who spent 25 years in Angola for a robbery.
I was sentenced to 60 years. I've been on parole for the last 13 years. I'm scheduled to come off parole in the year of 2039. So I don't even know if I will outlast the particular sentence.
The Louisiana Constitution allows suspension of voting rights for those who are under an order of imprisonment for a felony. That means, for now, Randy Tucker can't vote until his full 60-year sentence is served. Tucker's been back in society for more than a decade and succeeded as a free man. He started his own paralegal business. He's not just complaining about unjust laws. He knows what he's talking about.
The law of the land tells us that there shall be no taxation without representation. So that means if I'm not being represented or I'm not able to pick the representative of my choice by the Democratic vote, then therefore I should not be paying taxes. So for the 13 years, whatever tax I've paid into the system should either be returned to me with interest for the 13 years for whatever the amount it may have been, or simply give me the right to vote.
Tucker's part of a class action lawsuit filed in state court last July seeking to restore voting rights for the more than 70,000 Louisiana residents on probation or parole for felonies. We asked our Listening Post audience what they thought about the fact that so many Louisianans can't vote. Randy Tucker read a couple of the text message responses, and he shared his own insights.
If voting mattered to people as much as it should, a potential loss of voting rights would be a better crime deterrent. I think it's a very, very good. I think it's a very, very good answer to something. And I think what you have to understand, that person who wrote that one is that it is. And they're totally correct, because you are now listening to a person who has been deterred from crime. And I also have to add that had I would have known this prior to committing the first crime that I committed, I would not have if I knew this was a right that I was going to lose.
How often do you hear something like that? Read that.
The top one? Nope. All right. Sounds like... Well, I don't know what they mean by sounds like just desserts, but just desserts is just this. I lived out of a 15 by 30 inch box for 25 years. That's what I deserved. I got that. I get them. He don't owe me nothing. But he has to understand. Now I pay taxes just like you. I ride the same bus you ride. I ride on the same roads you ride. I go to the same grocery store you go to. I'm not asking for something that's not due me.
Now is the time for all good men to get together with one another. Iron out their problems and iron out their quarrels and try to live as brothers. And try to find peace within without stepping on one another.
That's it for this week. If you'd like to join our project, text HELLO to 504-303-4348. That's 504-303-4348. You can find us online at listeningpostnola.com or on Twitter, LP_NOLA. Our microphone is your microphone, New Orleans. See you next time.
We're going to head now from the voting booths to the coast. Something that will no doubt be on Louisiana voters' minds when they cast their ballot for U.S. Senator in November. As the state grapples with coastal land loss and looks for solutions, local universities are starting new programs to train scientists and engineers to help. One of those is at Tulane, which just opened a new waterfront campus near the Port of New Orleans on the river. It's called the Bywater Institute. WWNO's Tegan Wendland went for a tour with director Michael Blum.
We are in the entryway of the new Tulane River and Coastal Center, and we're overlooking the plaza. The value of the site is really in its location and its proximity to the convention center and to downtown, and also, really importantly, to the river. So in a lot of places in New Orleans, it's very, very difficult to access the river, whether you're on private property or public property. Being a river town, it's remarkable to say that there are very few locations where you can literally, on a very personal basis, go right up to the river. And so that's really one of the values and really important elements of this site.
Let me say, you're not going to be able to fit very many people in here.
Not yet. This is the first phase. It's a very important thing to mention, is that this is phase one of a larger vision to build out our presence on the riverfront. So
it's very tiny. It's sort of squeezed in between the parking ramps for the cruise ship terminals to the east and the port building to the right, right?
Yeah, so if you look at the scale of the buildings here, you have millions of square feet on one side with convention center. You have a very large institution on the other side with the port headquarters, and on, of course, on the other side, we have Mardi Gras World. So we are tucked nicely into a very large-scale landscape, and that's really one of the challenges, is to sustain a presence in an area that has a fairly large profile. And so if you look at the architecture of the site, the building proper, the new construction, is relatively modest, but it's got architectural elements that sustain a higher profile. So I really like the recycled warehouse roofing.
This is sort of dark wood paneling on the exterior. All right, so going inside.
So as you indicated, this is a fairly modest footprint. There's about 6,000 square feet of usable space, and it's really dedicated to two purposes at the moment. On one wing, we have what we refer to as the public forum space, and then on the other wing, we have a space allocated to offices and conference rooms and research labs.
You keep talking about engaging the river or interacting with it in some way. What does that really mean? What kind of research or science might be going on here?
It's a very good question. So right now, the folks who are working here are, again, a very good example of engaging the river. So when you think about the river, you think about water, and you think about sediment that's being carried by the water. And both of those two dimensions are critical for coastal restoration protection. Understanding how much water is in the river at any given time, how quickly it flows, very simple questions, are things which are the focus of some very dedicated research programs. Similarly, with sediment being transported in the water, again, if we're aiming to rebuild the coast, we have to know how much sediment is being transported at any given time and what kind of sediment is being transported at any given time. So the difference is that sounds simple, but there's a real distinction to be drawn between things like clay and soft fines as opposed to sand. So those are things which the research group that's being based right now is focused on. So they're out mapping sediment transport in the river, really getting a sense of how much building material we have available to us to restore the coast.
It seems like everybody's getting in on it these days. There's the Water Institute. UNO has a certificate program. A high school just got a huge grant to start a school on a barge.
That's right, New Harmony High. That's a good point. So in my mind, you know, the more the better. So there really is a remarkable deficit for a state that is contingent. I mean, think about the existential threats that the face states. You would hope that we would have the best and brightest available really tackling those issues. Right now, we import that talent. We get a lot of that talent from Florida and Texas. And that really speaks to the demand and the requirement, the need for that kind of training and expertise.
What else is there to see?
So actually, I'd love to walk into the forum space. This is one of the things that I think is, again, one of the greatest values that's offered by the facility. It really speaks to the location of the facility right on the riverfront. There are very few areas where you can look at the river and you can look at the bridge and really get a sense of your location within the city.
So this is like a big presentation or conference space, and we've got the mural to the left and then these windows all open to the river along the right.
Yeah, so it's a fairly simple template. The idea is that it's intended to support a range of different kinds of events, everything from conferences, small conferences up to about 150 people, to special events where we can have the space open, where people can come in and out.
Over here, this is the office and lab suite.
Yeah, so if you turn the corner, we enter an office and lab suite, and we have sort of program broken down into three different dimensions. One, we have fairly sophisticated research labs. We have workup stations for students and research technicians who are working in the labs. And then we have offices for folks who are, again, based here and who are doing a fair bit of their research program here. So the two kinds of labs that we have, one is dedicated to things that don't have carbon. The other is dedicated to things that do have carbon.
So you might take some core samples or samples of mud or something like that and try to determine what.
Exactly. So in the carbon neutral lab, we would be focusing on water proper. In the carbon rich lab, we would be focusing on materials that we would either filter from the water. So again, sand or sediment that's being suspended in the water, or we would be taking sediment cores where we're pulling cores out from, say, the bed of the Mississippi River or down in the Mississippi Delta proper.
Cool. Anything else we should see?
Other than offices at this point?
What about the riverfront?
Yeah, so actually what would be very useful is to go next door. Again, one of the values of this site is that it falls within the proximity of warehouses. So you think of what do university researchers need out of warehouses? Well, very simply, we need access to boats. We need to be able to store field equipment so that we can effectively run our operations down to the river and down to the coast.
So you're going to store some boats next door?
We already have them. Teams of researchers who are working on the coast and working in the river have been based out of this warehouse and making use of the facility.
The boats are actually in a shared space with Mardi Gras World, so there's a bunch of floats right here at the entrance.
So we call this very fondly boats and floats. This actually is... to Lane's space, but as a good neighbor, we make the space available on an as-need-be basis. We work very closely and coordinate very closely with Mardi Gras World. So for space that we don't need on any given day, you can find some great floats. The idea is that we can hook up a truck, pull the boat out, get on the road, go down to the coast fairly simply.
You're not putting them in here then?
No, not yet. Not yet. So the aim...
But that's the plan.
Yeah. So right now we're in the process of rebuilding the wharf, and the aim is to have immediate access to the river from the wharf proper. That's going to take about a year. So before then, we're going to be operating as we normally do, which is going outside the city and accessing the river and the coast outside the city.
Thank you, Michael Blum, director of the new Tulane Bywater Institute.
Thank you very much. I appreciate having the opportunity to tell you about it.
And finally on this edition of All Things New Orleans, we check in with WWNO's Do It All host, Farrer Hudkins. Farrer has been an important voice on our airways for the past 16 years, and he's heading north at the end of the month, moving to New York. You came to WWNO 16 years ago. How did you get connected to the station? Had you always had a dream of working in radio?
When I was really little, my dad had an old tube radio that actually at night up in North Carolina, I could receive WCBS in New York, and I listened to those well-modulated news announcers, and I thought that those guys sounded great. And eventually, I got more involved in music and kind of put that away. You know, I kind of forgot about that. By the time I was 20 and I came down here, I figured that I was going to be a musician. I was going to make a career out of it. I had come down here for a year of school back in 1997 and seemed to show some promise. I was in, you know, I got some gigs, and I had been connected with someone who was doing work in pit orchestras here, local theater. So I came down in 2000 to do that. Failing to make an adequate living as a musician, I was looking at my dwindling bank account, and I had dinner with a friend of mine from college who said, you know, you have a really good speaking voice, and you know a lot about music, so maybe you could be a music host on the radio. And that really had not occurred to me, so I immediately went to the phone book the next day and called every radio station in town. And this was the radio station that said, yeah, come on in.
And so when you started here, did you imagine that this was something that might then last for the next 16 years? Or did this seem like a temporary way to fill up your bank account a little before you went back to music?
It really did seem temporary. I remember thinking, you know, I will eventually get enough gigs as a trumpet player to where I will be able to be, you know, a New Orleans musician like I wanted. Yet, radio actually worked much better with my personality, because as a musician, it was very difficult for me to put myself out there, as my friends kept telling me, you know, you need to go and find the clubs where they let people sit in and sit in so that they get to know you and hear you play. And I never could do that. I don't get stage fright so much as I just can't handle crowds of people staring at me. Radio, where I'm just one person in a room, is perfect. I got very close one time to sitting in by invitation at Snug Harbor with Ellis Marsalis. I went, I brought my horn, I sat up in the balcony with my horn in the case, never took it out of the case, went right home and said, ah, that's as close as I'm ever going to get. Just far too shy for that.
What draws you to classical music? What about that genre specifically appeals to you?
Classical music is kind of like a movie. It takes a long time for the story to play out in the course of a symphony, which can be anywhere from 15 to 90 minutes. Operas are even longer. Of course, those actually have real stories. But even in microcosm, you know, a Chopin etude can be 3 minutes. But there's an emotional connection there. And as a programmer, I began to think, well, what are these people who are listening to 3 hours of classical music? You know, what are they gonna enjoy? I did something that was kind of unusual for a classical station, which is I don't program excerpts of works. I program full works to respect a listener's attention span. And I was rewarded with a great many comments, you know, positive comments about that.
As some of our listeners know, in addition to your passion for classical music, you also have a passion for antique cars. Do you see any connection or overlap between those interests?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of an open secret by now that I have an 81 DMC 12 car nearly as old as I am. So I kind of take offense at that word antique, because I guess that means I'm an antique now, too.
I apologize for my word choice.
No, that's quite all right. I understand. Actually, I got an antique plate for it, but so it's official now. I don't really see the connection except for the fact that it allows me to do something that I find very satisfying in life. When I was making playlists, I enjoyed being able to look at a playlist that I had created and be satisfied with it. And when you do work with your hands, like working on an old car, you can sit back when you're done with the job and look at it and say, yeah, I'm satisfied with that. And so the programming classical music fulfills kind of an intellectual need to have something that I can say, you know, I accomplished something today. And then working on an old car enables me to like physically accomplish something. So it's kind of two sides of the same coin.
You've been at the station for 16 years. That makes you among the most seasoned veterans here. How have you seen the station change over the time that you've been here?
In terms of technology, it's really improved by leaps and bounds. When I first got here, we were playing back from CD players, and the CD players were beginning to show their age, and they would start skipping. Sometimes they wouldn't queue up on time, or you'd get a little awkward moment of silence when you thought the music was going to start. We eventually moved to putting those onto the computer as audio files to play back, which was much more reliable. The fact that the audio quality is just miles above where it was when we got here, we were taking satellite programs on DATs, and if the recording machine and the playback machine were just slightly differently calibrated, you would get all kinds of garbled noise, and people would call and complain that they couldn't understand what was going on with Marketplace, and I'd have to sit there and apologize. Yeah, it's technology has gotten smaller and more efficient and much better sounding over the years.
The station is going to miss you. The city is going to miss you. I'm wondering if there is a particular song that you would like to go out on.
Yeah, how about Give It What You Can by The Meters? I think that'd be appropriate.
And why is that the song that comes to mind?
Because it's what I've done. Give it what you can while you still can give it. After 16 years, I've done a whole bunch of different things. I've worn a lot of different hats. And I've enjoyed every minute of it.
I've been speaking with Farrah Hudkins, longtime WWNO announcer and classic music programmer. He's relocating to Long Island, New York later this month. We will miss him dearly. Thanks for speaking with me.
Thank you for having me. I'm stunned by all the attention.
Thanks for tuning in to All Things New Orleans. Until next week, stay cool and enjoy your city, New Orleans.